Okay, greetings everyone, and welcome to the August business meeting of the California Truth and Healing Council. Listening sessions took place earlier this week and are already available at the California Tribal Advisor YouTube page, which is also streaming this event. My name is Christina Snyder, and I'm a member of the Dry Creek Rancheria Band of Pomo Indians and the Tribal Advisor for Governor Gavin Newsom. Before we get started, I'd like to acknowledge that I'm joining you from the ancestral homelands of the Patwin peoples. I'm going to briefly walk through some of the logistics and preliminary business for today's meeting. First, we are recording this meeting and it's available for public participation via Zoom and dial-in. It's also being live streamed on our YouTube channel, as I mentioned previously. The recording of today's meeting will be available on that YouTube and the CTHC landing page. For those interested in following the council, ongoing updates, including listening session recordings and the listening session summary documents, are available at the California Truth and Healing Council updates blog at CA Truth and Healing, that's all spelled out, catruthandhealing.com. You can also get updates for events by following the Governor's Office of the Tribal Advisor on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Additional details, including meeting dates, agendas, and background information are available at tribalaffairs.ca.gov/CTHC. You'll have the opportunity to provide public comment on agendized items throughout today's meeting and when we open up for public comment, and we'll have the opportunity to comment again at 3 p.m. sharp. If you'd like to provide comment at any of those times, you can raise your hand and our staff will call on you. If you're using the Zoom app, you should be able to raise your hand using the app controls, but you can also use Alt-Y in Windows or Option-Y on Mac to raise or lower your hand. You can also email written comments to info@catruthandhealing.com at your convenience. Now, before we begin, I'd like to remind participants that all of our council members, council staff, and many of you are members of the victim population in need of collective healing. So I ask that you engage with the council, our office, and each other with respect and with your whole heart and a healing mindset. Many of us doing this work are navigating systems that were not built for us to make change that was never contemplated. This in itself takes an enormous amount of patience and emotional integrity, and we're all doing our best to make strides in these spaces. So thank you again for joining us. And now we'll go through a roll call of the council before we have a traditional opening from Thomas Brown, who has joined us here today. We'll start with the Central Region. Councilmember Khan.
Present.
Councilmember Kessler Mata.
Present.
Councilmember Macaro.
Non eva.
Councilmember Burris.
Present.
And just for the record, Councilmember Manzano is not present, but her name is on here with a member of her staff. Listening in. Councilmember Perrone is not present. Councilmember Sisk. Chief Sisk?
I'm here. Great. Thanks.
Councilmember Roberts. Is Councilmember Roberts here? Chairman? Okay, we have no comments, so I'm not sure if, is Chairman on? Okay, well, if Chairman Anthony Roberts is on, please feel free to speak up. Otherwise, we will assume someone is using that link. Okay, Councilmember Bohorquez, didn't see him on. Councilmember Harper.
Yeah.
Councilmember Myers, didn't see him on either. And then Councilmember Giovanetti, I did not see on either. Councilmember Elliot Santos.
Present.
Councilmember Lucas.
Here.
Great. Councilmember Turner, I did not see on. And then Councilmember Phelps is not here because he had to do school duties. So let me just double check. We have 8 members that have identified that they're here. We do have quorum to move forward. At this time, we'll turn it over to Thomas Brown if you'd like to unmute your line and give a traditional opening.
Recording stopped.
Recording in progress.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Yahui. And we really appreciate your joining us for that traditional opening. That was very beautiful. So we'll go now into the approval of the minutes for May and June. And so all of you should have copies of that. Yes, Chairman?
Yeah, I just noticed that Chairman Roberts appears to be logged in as an attendee rather than a panelist. Could that make a difference as to why we didn't hear him?
I'll promote that login shortly.
Okay, sure.
And on that same point, can we confirm that he's actually present so that we can make sure we have quorum?
Yes. Good call.
And to clarify, if he's not present, you still have quorum. So it's just figuring out if he's using that link or if it's staff using that link.
How can we have quorum if someone's not present?
You have eight without Chairman Roberts on.
But we don't have Alexis Manzano on either.
But you have eight without Alexis either. You've got two Southern, one Northern, two Eastern, and three Central without Roberts and Manzano. And can we confirm who's using
the Roberts link actually dropped again as soon as I promoted them to panelists. So
okay. Could we maybe, are you able to put people as not panelists and so that we can have it not look like we've got Manzano on too?
Yeah, I can change the role to attendee for Manzano.
Okay, so it looks like we lost that Roberts link, but you've still got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You still got quorum to move forward.
All right. What is our quorum number? Is it 7?
8.
I'm presuming we set that in, at an earlier meeting.
In the charter.
Okay. Just wondering what our thinking was. Simple majority is usually a quorum of your board. But I guess 6, no, that'd be 50. 7, why did we land on 8? Just to be sure.
We also wanted to make sure that there was adequate diversity of representation.
Okay, got it. See, it's not just math, people. I would love to say that to my high school math teacher. Not everything is math.
Just anyway. To give you a heads up, I did get an email regarding Chairman Roberts. He's having technical issues and they're trying to work on that currently.
So we can take these one at a time, or we can do them all together, depending on whether folks have amendments for May and June minutes.
Are you looking for a motion? Okay, I move to approve both May and June meeting minutes.
And for the record, that's a motion by Councilmember Kessler-Mata.
And I'll second.
And that was Councilmember Harper?
Yes.
Great. Second by Councilmember Harper. We'll do a roll call vote. Councilmember Khan?
Yes.
Councilmember Kessler-Mata?
Yes.
Councilmember Macaro?
Yes.
Councilmember Burris?
Yes.
Councilmember Sisk?
Yes.
Councilmember Harper?
Yes.
Councilmember Elliott Santos?
Yes.
Councilmember Lucas?
Yes. Yes.
Great. Motion carries and the minutes are approved. And that was for both, correct? Okay, great. So now we will move into any council member updates. And so this is the opportunity for any of you to give any updates to the group based on conversations you've had over the last month or any thoughts you're having about the council and any of the listening sessions, which you can also give in the next agenda item as well. So I will mute myself in the event that any of you have any thoughts for the group or updates.
If you don't mind, I'll maybe just mention that I did want to make the observation that a good number of the folks that turned out at the listening session, at least for, I think, both Central and possibly Northern, there are a number of different allies, in a sense, that are showing up, not necessarily only community members. So there's folks from various state and local organizations. So it's not just Native folks. I think, you know, at some point we have to definitely focus on that outreach component, because I don't think we're getting the attendance that we need necessarily at those meetings. So, yeah.
Yes, I would agree with that observation. I it seems to me participation has dropped off pretty significantly. So, you know, I don't know the answer, but I definitely want to work on figuring out how we can do more outreach to Native people. Thank you.
Additional thoughts, comments, updates? Okay, then we will move to the next item, which is the public and community engagement and input. And again, you got a little bit of an update, but we had our listening sessions earlier this week. Again, attendance isn't always very good. It's, you know, it lands between maybe 10 to 20 people max. And so really, we do want to urge folks to attend those listening sessions so that we can get some good discussions going. We do know that there are people who are watching them after the fact, so it could just be also that timing is not working well for folks, because we see on our YouTube that people are going back and watching through them. But so that, you know, begs kind of the question too about when are good times for people to be able to engage in something like this, and what kind of what kind of messaging do people need to see to feel like it's worth their time and a valuable space for them to engage in, or whether they're just waiting for the regular parts of the council, like the healing circles and the testimonial parts and all of the meat of this work to get done. One thing we're going to do moving forward is we are going to send out a request for consultation to all of the tribes on the NAHC contact list to just kind of get a timeline going for any outstanding questions, and also have a baseline for input for tribal consultation at a minimum, so that we can get people aware of where everything is at, how we see people engaging, and then get some outstanding questions answered. And then hopefully all of that will help inform everything that we're trying to get stood up by the end of the year, so that we can launch into the regular schedule of this council. Over the last week, we had several discussions, mostly around education and curriculum development, but also the place of Native people within higher education institutions. We had a really good conversation with the Southern Region listening session about the role of public institutions in California taking up spaces that are our ancestral lands and ancient sites for Native people, and then also in a sort of tangential but related way of not providing a lot of spaces for Native people to even feel comfortable in those places. So that was part of the discussions we heard this week. And Loretta, am I missing anything? Would you like to add anything that we discussed?
No, I think that captures it for the listening sessions.
Is there anything any of the council members who attended would like to add? And I would add too that these, if council members are hoping to get kind of up to speed in the days leading up to the Friday meetings, we do an overview of kind of where everything is at in those listening sessions. So it can be helpful to get on the same page as to where everything is at currently. If there are no additional questions on that, we are going to be adding an evening option on probably Wednesday evenings, just to capture folks that are working and may want to engage off outside of business hours. And so just a heads up on that, that should be rolling out soon as well. Okay. If there are no further comments, questions, concerns on that, we'll move into the next item, and that's subcommittees. And here we've had these, at least the A, B, and C subcommittees on this agenda for some time. And I'm going to recommend that the council create those subcommittees so that they can take a deeper look at the issues or also the needs of those communities. Because we do get quite a bit of comments in the listening sessions that could be better fleshed out within the context of a subcommittee. I'm going to open it up. I don't know if you'd like to take them together or if you'd like to just have a conversation on each one. And then the idea, and just to backpedal a bit, is that we're in a space where your ability to meet virtually right now may be that waiver that allows you to do that and not meet in person. Maybe. And we've got Councilmember Giovanetti on, it looks like.
Sorry, it took a while.
Good to hear from you, Councilmember. And so we are going to recommend that by the next meeting, we have a little bit more structure around the subcommittee work so that some of the substantive work can get done outside of the context of these meetings. And so that those discussions can be happening at a more granular level and in a context where that's where you're going to talk about those things. So like, for example, if folks want to talk about curriculum development and how this council should be involved in that or not involved in that, then that can happen within the context of a bigger education committee, which then can come back to this council and make more recommendations about whether that's an appropriate structure or whether they feel like they may want to be structured differently. So same thing with status and identity, where you know, it would be worth having more fruit, like more detailed conversations about how that fits within the scope of this council, with recommendations to bring back to the council about whether a different type of structure would be preferred, or whether the work should be tackled in a different way. And so these aren't, you know, this council is going to, by definition, be building things as it goes and restructuring things as they work or don't work. And so my recommendation is just based on creating a space for those ideas to be fleshed out a bit more, to bring back recommendations to this council, whether that means dividing the work differently, looking at it with a different lens, or something different. So I will mute myself now.
All right, so it looks like we are looking at three different subcommittees that are here. So status and identity, education, and then elders. And my understanding is that Christina is looking for us to approve those three committees. We did have a little bit of conversation in the central regional listening session about the status and identity committee. A subcommittee, mostly because the central regional listening session had previously indicated that they did not necessarily want to combine disenrollment and recognition into one committee. So that was the message from them. We ran it, we discussed it and ran it again. And I won't say that there was any kind of resolution, but the way that it was explained at the time was that even though, or maybe this is my interpretation, even though the charter clearly indicates or suggests that there are an issue such as disenrollment, which is not necessarily under the purview of the state, right? Even though that's the case, right? So our charter doesn't encompass issues of disenrollment, that this would be a way, given especially the comments that we've received so far, to make sure that that is addressed throughout the course of the work of the council. So to make sure it doesn't fall in between the cracks. So giving it a place, right, in a space in the council. Christina, yeah.
I would just explain a bit more that there's people who lack status within federally or non-federally recognized tribes that are captured within the purview of this council, and we don't want that to go unaddressed. And so while I would say that the state and this administration are of the position similar to the federal government, that membership is solely under the purview of tribal governments to determine their own membership, that there are people that will benefit from this work and that will have gaps in the work if we don't accurately capture those gaps and those needs, and that should be in a place, though I would not necessarily recommend there being a space that is designated for discussions about things that this council has no ability, authority, or jurisdiction to be making suggestions on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in that sense, a kind of a, I won't say happy medium, but a place, right, for it to at least be flagged and continue on. Just from my perspective, I don't necessarily have a problem with any of that. You know, I'm happy to move forward however everyone else does on these issues, these subcommittee creations.
So on status and identity, I'm sorry I missed the last meeting. Do we get a commitment from members or request to be assigned to these different committees?
Not yet. We haven't established the committee in order to identify the members.
So you can establish with the members, or you can establish and then think about who wants to be a member. So either way. Or you can decide that you don't want to do any of that and then move on.
I would like to, if you're having trouble with getting people to volunteer for the status and identity one, I'd be willing to serve on that one as well. I know we're going to have an academic committee too, right?
You've got an academic partnerships, and then today you're contemplating an education committee, which could be what you might be thinking about, which is could be K through 12, could be higher education, or could be both.
So can I clarify, are we talking about three subcommittees or five subcommittees here, or we have not decided if they're three or five?
I am recommending three with the idea that you can organize yourselves how you want within the context of the subcommittee.
Okay.
And if you feel like those three, based on initial meetings or based on scoping that you do within the context of the subcommittees, don't capture accurately how they these issues should be captured, you can come back to the council and say, we don't want that anymore. We recommend these. And then you all disband one subcommittee in favor of creating others.
That might be worthwhile, because like the status and identity, I mean, it seems like we could take care of that in 3 to 6 months. I mean, really get, flesh it out, or how do other people think about that?
And to clarify too, just for this group, the need for this subcommittee too is based on the fact that there is going to be a different lens based on these issues, and that needs to be addressed within the work of this council. And so that subcommittee too would be thinking about how best to incorporate that, and then also could also take the time to meet with the Gabe Galandas, meet with the Lynn Rislings, and really think through how to accurately and adequately address this address those needs in the context of this work.
I do imagine that the next phase might be once we've established these subcommittees. So like, I don't necessarily want to make the motion myself, but I'm happy to support whoever does. But the next phase might be us actually doing listening sessions based on our subcommittees and doing outreach to the various groups that would be directly affected. So I think listening session attendance, hopefully, if we do outreach, would go up if we're bringing unrecognized tribes right to the table to discuss issues or probably first and foremost, how we want to constitute the committees, right? So in what shape or form do we want the education committee, K through 12 or higher ed, to have members outside of the council as participants in those councils or subcommittees. So once the subcommittees are established, we have to figure out what they're going to look like structurally, and then also how we're going to go about that work for the next couple of years. That's my understanding, at least.
And part of what we've thought about internally with that too is that those subcommittees could also find the appropriate people who could serve as non-voting members of the council, and then bring those recommendations back to this full council as well. So like, for example, let's say we have an education committee and folks would like Robert Levi to be serving as a non-voting member of the council because he's here right now and comes to all of our listening sessions and would be helpful in that work. That subcommittee could make that recommendation to the full council, and that would be, you know, based on their listening sessions, based on their expertise, and based on those kind of fleshed out conversations. So is anyone opposed to the creation of these three committees at this time? Or is there further discussion or thoughts needed?
What's the third one again, Christina?
Status and identity, education, and elders.
Okay.
And the elders would mirror or would be similar to the youth council, but potentially more of an advisory council where they're advising the work of this and also bringing all of the wisdom and experience from having tried to do things like this before to the table and what worked and what didn't work.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, this is Chief Sisk. I'm trying to think about, you know, I did the listening sessions somewhat, and I'm concerned about the status and identity title in itself, because one, we kind of know who we are. You know, we don't have an identity crisis. We have a justice crisis. And we have an equal opportunity crisis created, one, by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, but held in place by the state of California. And so while the truth and healing, we're in that together, what happened to all of the tribes in California, we share that history. But I still feel like we should, I think that those are almost two different subcommittees. One, those who had recognition and had status and had justice were then extricated from their own group, whereas the California people who did not get on the list still have no justice from the 1980s, when we had justice in the 1980s because we were eligible for every service and opportunity that this list then gave only a few that opportunity. And so I think those are two kind of different issues. And I don't want to get one bogged down with the other, because those are two different kind of formats. And they both need to go back to what the BIA did in its preparation of paperwork. And then also the effect of what happened and what happens and what continues to happen to all of the people who definitely are of bloodline California Indian, yet have no rights and no services. So I'm thinking we should have, because I don't feel like the disenrolled people have an identity problem either. They know who they are, they know where they come from, and they know what they want. And same as the unrecognized tribes.
My apologies for interrupting, but I think the framing here is what is critical too. And it's not that, you know, I as a Native person have an identity problem with myself. It's that it's the recognition piece of it. So a recognition of identity as a Native person and status as you know, part of a Native community, tribe, tribal nation, that I think is the connecting piece here, that this from like the state lens could have some impact.
So I think that could this is Joe. I think that could be a vibrant discussion or a series of discussions because of the difficulty, or sometimes perhaps the indifference, that some counties demonstrate to their tribes right there within the borders of their county, you know, like in consultation, you know, some counties, the tribes are the last thing thought of. less people talk to, you know, businesses transacted than, oh yeah, we forgot to contact the tribes or the tribe. That kind of stuff really creates a lot of friction here and there throughout the state. If that's what you're talking about, Christina, things like that.
Exactly. And that lack of recognition of nativeness and of descent is what is causing a lot of inequity as well.
Well, we have that issue like that, but it's not because Caltrans doesn't know who we are, or, you know, Cal Fire doesn't know who we are. It's that that recognition gives them the right to not include us and not be punished for it or not be held responsible to have told us that these meetings or these monitoring things were going to go on in these fire areas, when they know for a fact we already have our map in, we've already dealt with them over and over again. And there should come a time when the state steps in and says something on our behalf to the federal government about the situation that they created here.
Thank you, council member. And so as council member Giovannetti mentioned, I think, you know, all of this discussion is part of why we think that there should, or why I'm recommending that there should be a bigger conversation about this. It's targeted to thinking through all of that and thinking through all of, you know, recommendations based on discussions with the community, more discussions about kind of the experiences like you've just mentioned as well, so that there's more of a fleshed out recommendation about how the state should be thinking about this. And then also one of the issues that Councilmember Kessler-Mata has brought up in the context of academic subcommittees is figuring out how we define a California Native person. And that requires a lot more discussion and thought and energy that, again, given the limited time and resources that this council has, that would be best, in my view, so it doesn't have to be the universal view, but that I think could use targeted time and attention where those recommendations get fully fleshed out and then brought to this council so that they can consider it and, you know, efficiently and have the buy-in of that subcommittee that has done a lot of more listening, consultation, and research on all of these issues.
So, Christina, this is Joe again. So Councilperson Kessler-Mata, her suggestion about a discussion about what constitutes or goes into to the definition of what makes a California Indian. How do I want to say this? That would include a discussion about how because of the unique horrendous problems in California with recognition of so many tribes not being recognized federally, that IHS, Congress passed the Indian Healthcare Improvement Act with a special set aside for California Indians who are descendants only, blood by California, you know, from California tribes, but not part of a federally recognized tribe. So we're unique among all the states, I believe, that I think we're the only one to have that set aside because of the horrendous history here in California with tribes and the state and the federal government. So that would be one of the potential starting points in that discussion, correct?
Exactly. And the topic came up in the context of if there is going to be real action taken to address things in a way that accounts for descendants of genocide, we know that that's not necessarily tied to citizenship or status or identity even, and that those how you identify who benefits from that will really matter as this work develops more and those recommendations develop more. Council Member Elliot Santos, did you have?
Well, after hearing all this discussion, I would just like to make the motion that we establish these three committees so that we can, in fact, allow them to have these discussions so that we can move forward. And I do agree with a lot that's been said, and I don't, I'm the chairperson of a federally recognized tribe, and I feel that in many areas, we are in fact an afterthought. And that's usually only once we've been jumping up and down and screaming. And so I think there's many discussions that need to be had. And I think that's why we need to establish these committees so that we can move forward, because we have limited time and we need to take as much action as we possibly can.
Have a second.
This is Joe. I'll second that.
Any council member discussion? Do we have any public comment at this time on the motion?
No hands raised on the public side.
Okay, then we will do a roll call vote. Councilmember Khan.
Yes.
Councilmember Kessler-Mata.
Yes.
Councilmember Macaro.
Yes.
Councilmember Burris.
Yes.
Councilmember Sis.
Yes.
Councilmember Harper.
Yes.
Councilmember Giovanetti.
Yes.
Councilmember Elliot Santos.
Yes.
And Councilmember Lucas.
Yes.
Motion carries and the subcommittees are established. Would you like to stop now? Yes.
A hand did get raised as you were taking votes. So I don't know how you'd like to proceed with that.
We can take public comment. The motion's done, but we can take it.
Okay. Ken Woodrow, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Ken, we can't hear you.
Looks like they just dropped too, so.
Okay. Would you like to staff these committees now or think about it and do them in September? Councilmember Macaro?
Yeah, I'd suggest and recommend at our September meeting.
Any disagreement with that? Okay.
Ken has returned with his hand raised again, if you'd like to take comment.
Yeah, that's fine.
Ken, you should be able to unmute yourself. And they just dropped again, so.
Okie doke. Well, is there any other subcommittee that you'd all like to consider thinking about at this time? And what we'll do is you can discuss it right now, or we can do a bit of brainstorming and then think through it in the listening sessions and put them on the next agenda. Some things we've thought about on staff side are the wellness subcommittee that would think about how to incorporate emotional wellness, spiritual, mental wellness into this work and help us figure out what tools need to be developed in order for people to engage with this work in a meaningful way. And I see some hands raised, so I'll be very brief. We've thought also about potentially a strategic planning subcommittee that can work with staff on creating a strategic plan for this group, which wouldn't be substantive, but would be creating kind of a, you know, a game plan for how this work is going to get done. And then we've thought also about potentially a policies and procedures subcommittee that could help us flesh out any additional policies and procedures that that you'd all need to be able to move forward. And that includes things like, you know, within the subcommittee context, how do we process third-party inquiries in partnering with the council? Or how do we process third-party inquiries in wanting to speak with the council or for the council or in front of the council. And so those are the things that we've been thinking about internally. And what we'd like to do is before the end of the next meeting, have some of those mechanisms in place to be able to start that work over the next several months so that by January, hopefully we'll have kind of all of the mechanisms in place that you all would need to be able to start the regular work in your first regular meeting in March. So I'll stop there. Councilmember Burris had a hand raised.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up the point I made to you in our listening session on Monday that because I work with all the various cultural departments and cultural committees of the tribes in my area, I keep getting questions from them every once in a while about, oh, how is this going to be dealt with by the CTHC in regards to repatriation, cultural site protection. No one's asked me about language issues yet, but I can anticipate that someone might at some point in the future. So I'm just wondering, and that we know there's already bodies that deal with this, such as the Heritage Commission, but people are seeing that we're a Truth and Healing Council, and they're very much making the connection between these issues and healing and the healing process. So I'm just wondering if that's something to contemplate, that maybe it's one committee that deals with, say, all the kind of issues that tribal cultural departments and committees typically deal with. Maybe it doesn't even need to meet as frequently as the other subcommittees, because tribes are dealing with these on a regular basis, but a part of this council that tribes can, you know, communicate with. So that's just a thought I'm having, because I've gotten, you know, I'm getting these questions more than once. Because people know that I'm serving on this council. So they're asking about that.
Great. Thank you, council member. Any thoughts or discussion on that piece?
I was just going to actually second that idea that it's a cultural sovereignty committee of some sort that we could stand up. And I think it would dovetail on a lot of the stuff. But again, this is one of those things where both recognized and unrecognized are going to face different challenges in accessing sacred sites, you know, all of this different type of stuff that might fall under the cultural sovereignty category. But I think it's a great idea to stand up a committee like that. So thanks, Anthony.
This is Joe. I think that's really positive because I think I might have mentioned before, it just seems like all too often counties, you know, do a certain amount of patronizing their tribes rather than really recognizing cultural or, you know, any forms of sovereignty that tribes attempt to exert or you know, practice. And I kind of halfway wonder, is it because they can't see past the veil? They can't quite see, like, well, how are natives actually real? How do they matter to me and within the state borders? You know, why is there this thing about consultation, for example?
I think part of this too is thinking about how you all want to do this work, given that part of your charge is looking at, you know, the first decades of statehood, and then part of your charge is looking at ongoing injustices that are linked to those initial injustices. So just putting that in there about whether something like that is organized more thinking toward recommendations and gaps that you see now, or whether it's both, or whether, and this is, I don't have the answer, just kind of putting it out there to think about. Councilmember Burris, did you have another comment, or is your hand just still raised?
My hand's just still raised, sorry. I'm bad about that. How do I, a lower hand, okay.
Councilmember Kessler-Mata.
The other committee, so I guess it depends on how we're approaching the committee structure, because you know, I'm not sure if we're doing it. It's a bit ad hoc, as it's kind of been from the beginning. So it's unclear if these are supposed to be substantive committees or procedural oriented committees. It could be both, I suppose. But my thought was that we would also have potentially a justice committee, people who are specifically interested in looking at how, you know, both past and present, like, California Indians in the state justice system. So prisons, you know, like, I mean, there's a lot of different, I mean, ICWA cases, right? Everything goes to the courts, basically. So anyway, that's probably it from me from now.
That's also a really good idea, that committee, because of the ongoing threats to ICWA, the hostility from a lot of counties, from a lot of attorneys who they're pitching for somebody else to get Native children. And they're not all bad people trying to do this, but some of them are. Naming the problem, right? The importance of naming the problem. I think about, like, up in Humboldt County, in around 1920, there was a Redwood Creek Indian, or Cholula man, who was framed by the local law establishment and ended up going, sent to prison, San Quentin, for it, and did like 15 years or 20 years for it. And then it came out that he was framed by the county, and it was documented by a local retired county investigator here in Humboldt County. And so the poor guy ruined his life. He passed away. He's buried in Shasta County. And so the individual who did the scholarship, the research on how this man was framed by the law establishment in Humboldt County, this is around 1920-25, the researcher went with the man's surviving child to his gravesite in Shasta County. And they read the California governor's pardon to his at his grave. This was around 1990-91, somewhere in there. Jack Ryan was his name, R-Y-A-N. There's a lot in that story. You know, that would be a good early 20th century thing to, like, kick off the discussion of, like, okay, you know, it's like Rodney King or so many people, right? You just, it could be a starting point, or at least it's an important piece of the timeline of injustice to California Natives. He was framed for the murder of a woman in Ferndale. That was what happened to poor Jack Ryan. He was a half-blood Cholula or Redwood Creek Indian. And the Redwood Creek's not federally recognized.
Thank you, council member. And I think that's a good piece that could be actionable in the course of this work. The governor does modern pardons, and he has a lens for Native people specifically that we don't highlight a lot, but is out there, and I think would be helpful to, like, highlight within the context of this work, but also has a role in doing pardons of figures that were looking back from the lens of now were arrested or put through the justice system unfairly or in a way that doesn't reflect who we are as Californians today. And so that is a piece, given that a lot of being Indian was made illegal at the beginning of the state. It could be worth kind of thinking through whether there's even a function of pardoning people retroactively as well that could be recommended. Councilmember Macara, would you like to?
Well, I think so. Whatever it is you were going to say. Are you asking us, just to clarify before I go, you're asking us to give our thoughts about possible other subcommittees?
Possible other subcommittees. And it doesn't necessarily need to be long-term, because I'm sure that as the work gets done, you'll want to create them. And so I don't think, you don't have to think about how you're going to organize all of the work at this time, because a lot of it will happen as you get testimonial through the process of this, and how you sort your lens may change throughout the process. But what I'm asking is, assuming that you have a good chunk of time to create more mechanisms, more process, and more baseline lenses for some of this work that you know you're going to need to account for, What are the subcommittees that you'd like to get done so that we can start that work before the end of the year?
Yeah, okay. So let me try this out, because I do have a concern that we'll never get to the end, frankly. For example, there is a, and I don't know how much I can say on this in terms of politics, but there's a threat to the governor's existence. And I believe that our work as a commission is predicated on Governor Newsom staying in office. So, you know, we hope that the special election that transpires next month is successful on his behalf, in his favor, and then we can continue our work. So I don't know if I can politically message this, but everybody that knows somebody that is registered to vote needs to get out and vote. And there's that part. So setting that aside, we, in terms of focusing on the end, you know, I guess as football season approaches, I'll use this strained analogy. We all want to get into the end zone. We all need to run up the score. So we already know that there's a whole bunch of wrongs that have been committed here by the state of California. I have my own idea, and I think each commission member has their own idea of what the state should be doing. I mean, listening to the exchange that just unfolded in the last 10 or 15 minutes, from language to notions of justice and whatnot, got me thinking about this, and that perhaps we need a subcommittee that focuses on the deliverables. So that if something happens, we can hit the break glass in case of emergency button, and we can cut to the chase, because we have to be practical here, people. We can spin out as much reel as we want on all these issues that are being brought up, and many of these issues, to take the linear sequential timeline that would be required to do all the due diligence and collection of data and whatnot. I mean, you can decide how long that would take. You can decide it'll take a year or it'll take 10 years. And each one of those is entirely appropriate. And the 10-year timeline to collect this information is going to yield more, a fuller picture of what is going on. And that would be maybe one of the outcomes is, you know, when the work of the commission comes to end, that the collection of data continues, so that the entire picture is as filled out as possible. Still, you know, I know there are issues just randomly all over the place. For instance, I've said this before, you know, in the state of Michigan, for different purposes and circumstances, there is a law, and I think it exists in other states now. I've been told that native individuals, Indians in the state, are entitled to tuition-free education from state universities and colleges. Now, that should be the case here in California. That's kind of a big thing, right? I've mentioned before, no California Indian should have to pay fees for hunting and fishing licenses. That's just an absolute insult. Okay, that's a smaller thing, but especially in the South, because all the reservoirs are drying up and there's in a short while, not going to be any fish in these lakes and reservoirs or along the coast. And then, you know, I know the state history framework for public schools still uses the term pre-Columbian to delineate between, old history and newer history. And really, does the state school framework still need to be defined in terms of Christopher Columbus? So, you know, there are things that are maybe low-hanging fruit that we could put on a deliverable list and say, look, state, you wronged us throughout our entire history with you since 1850, and therefore, here's what needs to change, and here's what you're going to do, because you told us, look, you're sorry for what happened, and you want to make things right and help us heal. These are things I think that would make us feel better and help us heal. And some things run deeper and will take longer, but this is on the short list of stuff that needs to change. One other thing I'll add to this list of deliverables, since we don't have such a committee, but if we did, this would be at the top of the list as well. Any offensive place name that exists in the state of California. I know in our region here, we still have a mountain called Squaw Mountain. And there've been some complaints about it. I'm not sure whose land it's on, who has the jurisdiction. But if it's on state lands, that should be an easy one for this committee to not only recommend, but get the thing done. But throughout the state, there are places that are named and commemorate and therefore honor and perpetuate the memory of something offensive, something that happened there, like Massacre Village or, you know, Massacre Valley or something like that, or commemorate the name of an individual who committed such wrongs and should no longer be honored in such a way where the state has a role in maintaining those things. So, you know, just some quick examples on, you know, counting on the fingers of my hand that, and there's others that, you know, people came to this commission thinking, okay, if we're being asked to have the state give us justice, what does that look like? Well, it looks like big things and it looks like little things. And those things we can put on a list, and the subcommittee can have that list as a running tally of, you know what, here's what our end zone looks like. And here's what the next 8 touchdowns look like right here, and a couple field goals too. So let's, you know, I'm concerned that we're going to spend a lot of time structuring our committee, and that's necessary. And we're going to spend a lot of time, you know, collecting and then, you know, creating citations and all kinds of stuff that I want to keep us focused on the deliverable, on the end result. So maybe we need a committee that does that is the deliverables committee. I don't know. For lack of a better term, that's it. That's what I came up with. I'm not.
Reparations, potentially.
What is it?
Reparations.
Reparations, sure. Sometimes that term is heavy. You know, sometimes people think, oh, you know, it means a payout, and it could mean anything I talked about as well. So, reparations certainly.
Prepare. But we can think about other, I like the deliverables as well. Like what's the actual stuff that needs to happen to make people feel not whole, but more whole maybe.
Mm-hmm. There's certainly things that would improve where the state has had a role in diminishing. This is how the state can correct that. Where the state has had a role in diminishing a California Indian or a California tribe, this is how the state can remedy that thing. And it's things big like reparations, certainly, and it's things small like hunting and fishing license fees. So anyhow, so I preface this all by saying, let me try this on and see what that comes out like. Thank you.
Thank you, I appreciate that. And I think that is very aligned with the charter and the ability of this council to make recommendations aimed at reparation and restoration. So Chief Sisk had a raised hand. If you'd like to unmute your line.
Okay, am I unmuted? Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I'm just kind of, you know, it kind of makes me feel more and more left out every time the tribes, the federally recognized tribes, per se, are talking about, you know, getting a little bit more, getting a little more, while all of those low-hanging fruit that you're describing as fish and wildlife, fees waived, ICWA issues, the state tuition for colleges or even preschool or school at all. For unrecognized people, those low-hanging fruit are still out of our reach. They are not something that's going to make our lives better or our children's lives better. And whether or not, you know, I just feel like this council needs to address the identity of California Indians so that we're all benefiting from the process or the progress that's going to be made in state tuitions or, you know, our rights with ICWA and our rights with land issues and access to home monies and all of these things that the tribes already get. And then unrecognized tribes are still undealt with. I mean, nobody even wants to deal with why are we unrecognized? What happened? Because we didn't get on that list. How come we didn't get on that list? We're already federally certified by the federal government under our tribal name for the state of California and all its services. So for me, it's like, we need to figure out who gets the low-hanging fruit. Because I don't feel like, you know, fishing license isn't going to do my guys any good or girls any good if they're not on that list of federally recognized tribes.
I mean, so I think that that's a good point and links directly back to the conversation that we were having about how to define a California Native person, because this actually came up in the context of thinking about some of those things within the context of the Academic Partnerships Committee, is that, you know, if we have solutions that are aimed at addressing the needs of descendants of Native genocide in California, that you have to have a baseline for that that isn't tied to necessarily nationhood or some sort of external factor. You know, for example, like even the ability of, you know, certain institutions to consider you being Native is derived from your enrollment number in a federally recognized tribe, for example. And so like, what is that baseline that this council can recommend that is a consensus baseline for you are a descendant of this legacy of genocide that the state is responsible for. And so the state then owes you some sort of remedial measure in terms of, you know, tuition, access to resources, access to sacred sites, access to hunting, fishing, and the like that isn't derivative of your necessarily citizenship in a modern or a tribe within the construct of the federal state tribal jurisdictional construct. But so not invalidating anything you're saying, just saying that that is exactly, I think, why that conversation about who is Native came up in the first place. So it is something that needs to be examined as well. Councilmember Giovanetti had a raised hand.
Yes, I wanted to make a comment following Council Member Macaro's recent comment in our discussion, where he mentioned diminishing, you know, any kind of diminishment of California Native people in any respect. And I think that an interchangeable word to describe diminishment is disenfranchisement. And I know I kind of sound like a broken record on this. I think I brought it up a couple months back that, you know, we were disenfranchised from our land bases. You know, the treaty commissioners in 1851, Wollstonecraft, Barber, and McKee planned to set aside, I think it was 7.5 million acres of California land for the California tribes. And so disenfranchisement from our civil rights after all that, you know, with the 1850 Act, you know, on and on. And then disenfranchisement from our health care termination, you know, period 1953 to 66 and beyond. And so I'm thinking that those two terms, diminishment and disenfranchisement, just work. They work and they work and they work. They're applicable all over the place. And I think that's beneficial. Another thing I wanted to say is that maybe something else we might consider down the road is I wasn't present at this, but I believe around 1990, I have the video of this. This is a really, really powerful video. I used to use it in teaching. San Francisco State University, working with a lot of California tribes, sponsored a genocide symposium where they put the United States on trial for the crime of genocide against California Indians. And they had somebody who'd worked in the UN, they had attorneys, they had indigenous people. It was broader than just California Indians, but they also had African Americans. They had testimony from Native Hawaiians, Puerto Ricans. A lot of ethnic groups have been really poorly treated, you know, across California history since 1850. And they ended up finding the United States guilty of genocide against these indigenous groups. That would have been a fantastic thing to attend, but maybe so the United States was put on trial in absentia. But it could be an interesting academic exercise because, you know, they couldn't have possibly brought out everything, you know, in a day and a half conference or whatever it was. I'm not saying we have to put on such a conference. It just shows you how much material is out there affecting California tribes and indigenous peoples.
Thank you, council member. And it strikes me that that could also be, you know, were there ideas along the way about ways to incorporate the broader community outside of Indian country, and then even the youth groups, having something like that where they're thinking through all of that and putting something together could be really interesting as well. Councilmember Lucas.
Good afternoon. You know, this really gets to be an interesting process, but I think Chairman McArdle has a real good point and possibility that perhaps we should grab what we can while we can. You know, the whole world and the state, everything is in turmoil. On the other hand, non-federally recognized Indians have a valid point. At what point in time do we really address the ignorance on not recognizing them as being entitled to whatever some federally recognized Indian is entitled to, too? So my question is, okay, I know my own situation is very complicated and I won't go into it, but it does raise the question, I think, how is it or how did those tribes not become federally recognized? If that list was created in the 80s, my understanding was that it was created to establish those tribes that still needed federal assistance. So if that's true, then how did all these tribes, northern tribes particularly, get left out? In my situation, we were already grown up and out on our own, and there was just one family left. So I can see how we got forgotten. But I am concerned. There is a lot of work to be done. It's very complex, very different from the northern part of the state to the southern part of the state. But we're not just dealing with our issues. We're dealing with the water issues. We're dealing with the fire issues. We're dealing with the world issues. We're dealing with everybody else's issues, and we want to get our own stuff done too. And then I'm looking, how do we maintain this culture into the future? How do we make our children proud of who we are? More importantly, how do we continue to respect our ancestors and leave a legacy for them? So I think we have two very different situations here, but it to me seems conceivable that we get on both of them and try and do something in a short term and get something that will at least satisfy both perspectives, if that makes sense.
Thank you, council member. Any other thoughts at this time on anything we just discussed? And Councilmember Giovanetti, you've raised your hand again.
Yes, I did. I was thinking, it just struck me the symmetry of some of this, why the failure of the federal government to adequately identify the California Indians. And I think the symmetry is almost perfect. And but let me say what it is. So in 1851 and 52, when Wollstonecraft, Barber, McKee went around attempting to make treaties, they made the 18 unratified treaties with the California tribes. I believe they only hit about, I don't even know if they hit half or 60% of the existing California tribes. And you know, the Handbook of North American Indians, Volume 8, I believe it on this talks about there. If it's not in there, it's in another book. There were actually 300 California tribes at one time, and then the small number that they ended up actually dealing with after the beginning of the 20th century. But enough for that part of the history. So then, when the United States decided to do something about identifying the enumerating through a census, the landless California Indians, the engineer C.E. Kelsey from San Jose went about the state. And I know that he didn't get to more than 2/3 of the tribes in taking that census. That census is available. For example, Humboldt State University, the Humboldt Room, has a copy of that census. You know, so many of our ancestors were on there, but not everybody. And it was so chaotic, like my native grandfather who raised me, he was born in 1899. He was offered an assignment on the Hoopa Reservation, which is very odd because my tribe's like, I don't know, 40 or 50 miles northwest of the Hoopas as their crow flies. But we have this pattern of like the BI just doing whatever, randomly making assignments to whoever they felt like. But so... Then Kelsey went around the state and purchased rancherias. He purchased my tribe's rancheria like 1909 for like 112 acres for $100 he paid in gold to the woman who owned it. And it was right at the mouth of the Smith River, you know, with fish right there. Kelsey looked at many places before he shows that site. But I'm sure that my ancestors spoke up that we need to be able to catch every kind of fish, and we've only been here forever. You know, we have to have access to all that. So to me, that's a lot of symmetry between the Treaty Commissioner's work of 1851-52, which was blunted and erased when the U.S. Senate agreed not to vote on those, to ratify any of those treaties. They just put him in a box for 50 years, basically. And then the work of Kelsey, 55 years later, whatever, going around the state, taking a census of landless, quote unquote, landless California Indians. And then that was used as a basis for creating a rancheria system. And then after 1934, many of those rancherias started to become federally recognized entities. I hope that helps.
Councilmember Lucas?
Yeah, I just want to go back to those deliverables. If somebody made a motion, I'd be happy to second it.
Sounds like an invitation to Councilmember Macaro.
I appreciate that, but I mean, we have a lot of work to do. I was speaking in the context of a potential committee, subcommittee. I do want to use this opportunity that, you know, when I made my comments, I was making them in terms of inclusiveness of all California Indians, whether they were from an unrecognized tribe or a federally recognized tribe. There are things that affected every Indian person in the state, certainly our ancestors. And I felt that some of the comments made after that had put forth a paradigm of us versus them And I don't think that coming from us commissioners, that that's something that's helpful. It's a reality I will readily admit. And you know, there are differences between even federally recognized tribes by geography, by culture, and then I think certainly tribal, whether we are unrecognized or recognized, there are just, you know, not everybody is similarly situated. So I set all that aside, and I was making some blanket remarks that I felt were inclusive of everybody. And I'll keep making those types of remarks. I guess have to resign myself to the notion that some people will hear them as not applying to them, I suppose, or not their circumstances. And it's not intended to. The point of my whole statement was to try to keep us focused on the end result. And, you know, every circumstance in every tribe's history, as different as it may be, as those histories were evolved, may yield the need for a different end result. But, you know, we don't know that if we don't focus on what the end result is, in my opinion. You know, sometimes people set out on a road trip, and when they leave, they know where they're going to go. They're going to go to the East Coast, or they're going to go to the Canadian border, or they're going to go to Four Corners or something. But they don't know yet. They just know they're going to get there, and they don't know if they're going to go left or right, if they're going to take highways or interstates. And, you know, it's good to know where you're headed so that you get there. But that's really my point, as pure, plain and simple as it is. So, I just don't want us to spend too much time getting stuck on a dead end road or a cul-de-sac or, you know, a one-way road that goes off a cliff.
Really well said. And I think part of that goal setting is how you achieve the recommendations to get there, like Councilmember McCarroll just mentioned. So when you think of, and I don't know if everyone's seen this graphic, but the graphic for equity, where everybody's trying to see above the fence to see, you know, what's over the fence. And some people need to stand on two boxes. Some people are tall enough to see it already. Some need one box, but the whole goal is to see above the fence. So that's where you want to reverse engineer from, is we all want to get to this place. Some people are going to need more. And so that'll inform how you get there, as Makaro just mentioned. But the whole goal is not, it's equity to get to the same place so that we're all thriving and not some people thriving more and some people thriving less. Council member Giovanetti, I think, raised
his hand. Yeah, I wanted to ask, you know, a lot of this work has already been done. For example, during the Nixon administration, they did the American Indian Policy Review Commission, AIPRC, and they took testimony all over the country for a long time and submitted a multi-volume report that was quickly abandoned because somebody back in Washington said, well, I suppose in today's jargon, they would use the term, well, the liberals are running amok. They want all this for Indians. They're saying all this stuff happened to Indians. And then I think around the fall of 1994, there was the really lengthy report that was partly generated out of UCLA. They helped pull these materials together for basically a petition. And forgive me, I can't think of the acronym of that particular report, but I'm sure that was a very lengthy report, extremely detailed, heavily footnoted on everything having to do with our history and legal quandary that many tribes find themselves in today. And it was done in the hope of doing something to move the logjam of the 50 something petitioning tribes in California. So I'm not sure, you know, in the storm of traffic in Washington, D.C., you know, it would take a lot of lobbying to pull enough resources together to break the inertia to do something to get, you know, a large group of unfederally recognized tribes recognized. But that was the hopes of that. So that stuff's available at UCLA. And so I'm just thinking about the good work of many other people before us. I'm not necessarily all before us. Some of them have passed on who did that important work. But one of our future meetings, we could start deciding about how much information on each one of these topics, or, you know, beginning summaries even of the anticipated types of work or types of documents that we want to pull together and begin synthesizing to see what's there.
Thank you, council member. And I think that might even be something that would be part of a subcommittee structure as well. So let me think about that a bit more. Councilmember Harper, I'm sorry, I overlooked you.
Not at all. I think my hand went up and down by accident. I do like this discussion about deliverables and synthesizing information. And I think it might help us if we can take, you know, time on our own or whatever to think about these interim targets. Like, what do we want to accomplish by the end of 2022? Can we identify what specific things we want to have addressed? And then in recognition of the fact that we would only have three more years left, right? Is that right? To get work done, 2022,
23, 24? We could amend the order if we needed to, but.
Oh, okay. Well, just kind of think about
the deadline though.
Yeah, think about the time frame and really focus on trying to get something accomplished in that first year, and then other things will take longer, or may new ideas will sprout out from the work we do. But I too share that fear about, you know, I really would like us to see having something done by the end of next year. Not something done, I mean specific things that we have researched and feel that we can address. So thank you.
Thank you, council member. And part of that, just to react to the comment too, is I've been thinking about how this council does its work. And it may be that the council has ongoing business meetings in addition to the quarterly structure, just because part of this is the internal work of capturing all of that. And then part of it is the external engagement work of healing and testimonial. So Councilmember Sisk, you had your hand raised as well.
Yeah, I did. I just wanted to follow up on some of the issues that I'm trying to explain to the council, because one, you know, I work with the Department of Water Resources on returning the salmon to the McLeod River. And they have been making decisions about the salmon on the McLeod River and the fish on the McLeod River for a very long time. And the problem being, most of those people who are making those decisions on the McLeod River never have seen the McLeod River, never have seen the fish or the habitat of that river. And so I'm feeling like, you know, the unrecognized tribes have been watching the federally recognized tribes for a very, very long time. And we've been to a lot of different meetings at a lot of different rancherias and tribal offices. And we have put together with some of the bills that were passed in trying to make sure that the unrecognized tribes were included in some of those bills, like AB 52. And I'm not sure that the federally recognized tribes really have seen the workings of the unrecognized tribes. I don't know if you've been to our offices or have seen our staff or have looked at our budgets or the things that we're kind of working on or looking at in preserving a specific culture in this state, so that it continues on. Because one of the things we know for our area is that there are no federally recognized tribes in our area who can and are willing to put money into protecting the land that needs to be protected, even if we can't. But right now we're doing that work without all of the assistance of the things that support the recognized tribes. But I'm just saying that there are a lot of reasons why, you know, the time is short. This is an opportunity to maybe change things around for unrecognized and disenrolled people so that they also are equally served justice and rights as all other people listed on the federally recognized list, since we all paid for the lands that make all of the recognized tribes recognized. That's all I have.
Councilmember Sisk, I think two things. One thing, again, I would encourage focusing less on some of the divisive language between different statuses of tribes. I think it's the purpose of this council is to be a collective space. And I think lateral violence is going to keep us in the crab bucket. And so I would encourage where there are perceived inequities that we bring it up to the bigger issue of those inequities weren't caused by Native people and look at it through that lens rather than a comparative lens of, you know, how other tribes choose to prioritize the limited resources they do have. But then I also do want to bring back another point that was pretty salient that you made about the fact that decision makers and policymakers in general are making decisions about communities that they've never been to. And that's 100% accurate. And that's not just in Sacramento, that's in DC as well. And so, you know, as this group thinks about its recommendations and how to make sure that these, that whatever comes out of this council is like really incorporated and thought about by people who are making decisions for you, that's something you think about is how do you address that and make sure that policymakers are not making decisions about your rivers, your waters, your lands, your resources without having any sort of context or background in it. Councilmember Elliott Santos, and then before we get to that comment, we were going to have a break. I may ask if we can have a 5-minute break at 3 before we get into public comment. But okay. So Councilmember Elliott Santos, if you have a comment.
I do. I agree completely that we need to stay on track and we need to get as many deliverables accomplished as possible. Just what Chairman Macaro said, I'm the mother of 4 and the grandmother of 6. And I would love to see those young people be guaranteed a college education so that one day they are the decision makers that you're talking about, so that they can go out and serve their tribes and be doctors and lawyers and run our clinics and run for state legislature or governor someday or whatever. But we have to say that that's a priority at this committee. We have to say that educating our people and giving them what they need to rise above all of the pain and heartache is a priority. And so I think we can do that while we have that discussion about what is the definition of a California Indian. And we have to multitask to be able to get all of these things done. So I may be out of line, but I would like to make that motion that we have this deliverable subcommittee and that we choose who's on that at the next meeting in September. I don't know if everybody's okay with that name, but I just think that if we're all on the same page, that we need somebody to continue guiding us and be that, you know, we need a little group that says, this is what we need to stay focused on. These are the things we can accomplish in the first year or two. These are our ultimate goals, you know, by year 5. So I would like to make that motion.
Thank you both, Councilmember Elliott Santos and Councilmember Lucas. I think what we are recommending on our team on a sidebar is that because it hasn't been agendized, we'd recommend putting it on the next agenda and voting on it then. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yes, that's okay with me.
Okay. Any other thoughts from the council before we take a quick break before public comment?
I want to mention real quickly that at the meeting 2 months ago, I mentioned a former College of the Redwoods history professor, the late Chad Hoops. He's the author of a book that he did, I think it was based upon his master's thesis research at BYU back in the day. But the title of that book is Domesticate or Exterminate. That's a really useful, quick look at the 18 unratified California treaties, the work of those treaty commissioners. And it's a little pricey, but I'm sure like every university library in the state has that book.
Thank you.
From around 1975 or so.
I think I'd like to have a small think tank group that we can talk about creating in the next meeting that will help shepherd those resources that folks can be reading before they engage with the council. And so we can build out that list of stuff. There's no further comments. I'd like to have us do a break until about 5 after, if that's okay. Okay. James, are you good to give us a break?
I'll bring up a slide and we'll go on break.
Thank you. We'll see you all in a little bit. Okay, so for those council members that are back, welcome back. But if not, we are done with official business and we'll table the rest of the items until next meeting. And you all have drafts that you've gotten in Word so that you can redline them. And again, if we could get those red lines by COB 2 weeks from now so that we can pass them back around to the group before the next meeting, we would love that. And now we will open up to the regular public comment portion of today's meeting. If James, you could moderate that.
Yeah, are we, just to clarify, are we running timers for the public comments this time too?
I think so. And okay. Yeah. We'll play it by ear.
Okay.
But yes, for now, let's do that.
All right. The first person to have their hand raised is Destiny Rivas. Destiny, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Sorry, I was having trouble with that.
Yeah, you're unmuted.
Okay. I just really wanted to introduce myself. My name's Destiny Rivas. I have just started working with and became the chair of the San Joaquin Urban Native Collective. It's something we started over here in the Valley because we were having a lot of issues being seen and recognized and heard in our own communities. I work at a Native Education Center and we have over 2,000 Native American students. And a lot of them, you know, as you guys were talking about identity, it really felt and it hit home because I had a lot of California Natives in this group and some of them were recognized, meaning that they had tribal enrollment and then even cousins or brothers and sisters did not have it. And so we were having trouble like getting them services and getting them into the college and the career readiness. And then also, you know, this person can apply for that, but your sister cannot because of all the traumas and all of the policies that have been enacted and what it means to be Native. So what we've been doing is we've been doing a lot of advocacy work. We've been working with our school districts, Stockton Unified itself, to bring awareness to what's going on and how these students are still important and still need to be heard. We're working to get rid of some of the policies that disclude some of our children. And then we're also working on the EJ side, which is kind of interesting. because like for myself, I've been here for three generations. And when I'm going into some of these water board meetings, we are being told that my voices, our voices, our students' voices, these collective voices do not matter because we are not the right tribe in the right region, when it's not because we didn't move here because we wanted to. These were because of policies that were enacted by the federal government, that we were, you know, forcibly moved, we were pushed into different places, and we still have this connection to the land, and our stewardship of this land and the water and the air is still relevant. So that's why we formed this San Joaquin Urban Native Collective, and that's why we're trying to do the work and trying to make sure that all of our California voices are heard and our children are seen and being recognized. So that was all.
Next hand raised is Robert Levy, it looks like. Robert, you should be able to mute yourself.
I think I did.
All right, you're good.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Robert Levy. I guess I'm the educational person here helping the council. Just a couple thing items is that what the council member Macara was saying about what's being delivered. Well, the educational portion is being delivered. I mean, I've been with Christina Loretta for 5 months now, been mostly to every session. And again, you know, what can be delivered from the educational part is being delivered already with Council Member Ramos, or Assembly Member Ramos's 1554 ACA bill with the inclusion of California Indian history in the social studies history framework, which is going to be revamped, I believe, next year. So we're at the right place at the right time. And again, I can't emphasize if any of the council members are if they let anybody know that, writing Tony Thurman, the state superintendent of education, writing the commission on instructional quality, writing Tony Boyd, which I mentioned earlier, for the California Teachers Association, to make sure that 1554 is being passed, is being noticed by California Indians. And, you know, if you guys haven't, then it may not be delivered. But what also is going to be delivered is the fourth component for the ethnic studies, which is going to be a 2024 California graduation requirement. And again, with that being said, the need for California or just American Indian teachers coming out of the Cal States and UCs as within the teacher prep program, and also within that program, having Indian educators, you know, telling or not telling, but helping these students who are going to be teachers to recognize the inequalities and just the way the Indian students work. And also with the past comment in terms of having that San Joaquin Indian Education Center, hopefully the council has got in touch with all the Indian education centers throughout the state of California to also write letters, write their assembly members, their state senators, to, you know, look at the importance of what's going on in terms of Indian education. So again, you know, that's we're the healing part of what's going to be happening, because public ed is for every student in the state of California who attends a public school. Also, real fast, I'd mentioned yesterday that there's the second annual California Indian Cultural Awareness Day, Monday, August 23rd at 5 o'clock, which is sponsored by San Manuel. Shameless plug, but okay. It starts at 5, and you can watch it on their Facebook page. There being James Ramos. So again, that's part of the healing process also. So thank you for your time, and thank you for listening, and thank you for the jobs that you guys have volunteered to do. Thank you very much.
Luis Ramirez, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Hello, my name is Luis Miranda Ramirez. I'm tribal chairwoman for Ohlone Costa Noah Neslin Nation. I'd like to say that I feel sort of upset and would like to support Chairwoman Fisk. When she's talking, and you said perceived inequities, these are not perceived inequities. there is a difference between federally recognized and non-recognized tribes. As chairwoman of a tribe that is not federally recognized, but included in by C.E. Kelsey's Landless Indians, my great-grandfather was the only one mentioned by name as the and his family as the Monterey Band of Monterey County at the Sur Rancheria. And the Sur Rancheria, the Americans that came from the East Coast took that land. Isabel Meadows wrote about that. So when we talk about what we've been through, it's not perceived. These are inequities when we're working, because when someone doesn't want to meet with us or doesn't care to consult with us, they don't, as a non-recognized tribe, and they always don't listen to us. So I stand with Chairwoman Fisk and say that, yes, she is fighting and we are fighting and it continues. And we need your support and support of federally recognized tribes to understand that we know who we are, we've been here, we're fighting, and we're fighting without money. What money we have is our monies, our funds, what we raise, and it doesn't go far. But we try to go as far as we can to protect our homeland, to protect our elders, and make sure that we're able to rebury our ancestors. That is our fight. And there are inequities because we don't have the land to rebury, and we need to find those places so we can and work. So thank you, Chief Sis.
I just want to very quickly jump in and apologize if that was anything that I said. It was completely unintentional, and I do mean experience inequities. So I apologize if I may have said something that I did not mean to say.
The next hand raised is Ken Woodrow. Ken, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I was also following along with that statement, being that we do fight. You know, I spent 5 years on the water board, going to meetings, I dealt with dams, I've dealt with power companies, I've dealt with counties that, you know, their response is, well, if it's a special area, tell us the names of the people that are buried there. Tell us, why didn't you bury your people 6 feet like we do? I mean, these are comments to an unrecognized tribe. The thing is, I don't see how hard it is to create a committee for state recognition. It's not difficult. The criteria is there. It's on your website, Native American Heritage Commission. Not all those things can be fulfilled because Casey, well, when the treaties were signatures, they didn't come to the East Coast, I mean, West Coast. They were just out doing what they wanted to do. I mean, I'm a descendant from three signature tribes. Where do we go from here? Our tribal area is in federal land, and states just, you know, I deal with Caltrans, Cal Fire, all these different agencies, 40 agencies. And within those 40 agencies, you go down to county agencies. It's very hard for us. We have no department. I just, looking at the petition process, we know how that is at the federal level. You know, I'm just amazed how much the cost is to go for federal recognition. The last estimate I got was $24 million. And that's somebody else doing the research for us. That's why the state pretty much owes us since the treaties. They owe it to us. I mean, I didn't like my mother going to boarding school. Nothing I can do about it. I don't like our lands being seized because of taxes. We have nothing to say. We are, just like that lady said from the San Joaquin, there's over 2,000 in my area. I got 6 recognized tribes. I have nothing against them. They're doing the best they can since the 80s, since they're able to voice their opinions and voice their concerns. but it's very hard. We need a committee on state recognition. Thank you very much for your time.
Next hand raised is Kathy Corey. You should be able to unmute yourself, Kathy. You're unmuted, it appears, but we can't hear you. Still can't hear you. Nope. I see you muting and unmuting, but we cannot hear you. Maybe test your audio and we'll go to the next hand. Oh, go ahead, Kathy. It sounded like you finally figured it out. Can you unmute yourself again, Kathy? Hello?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can now.
Hilly, hilly. Kathy Corey, Chikshansi. I listened to this conversation with much of the same concerns of Chief Sisk, and I'm here as a representative of one of more than 10,000 tribal citizens that have been disenrolled from federally recognized tribes. And the great majority of those disenrolled are here in California. I also felt apprehension at the perceived discrepancies in services because of the fact that, you know, it is not only state and federal governments that are disappearing our people. It is actually many federally recognized tribes that are disappearing their own people through disenrollment. I think that to have real truth and healing here in California with all California Indian people, the issue of identification of who are California Indian people has absolutely has to be addressed, because I see more opportunity and benefit being offered toward members of federally recognized tribes when in actuality, there are so many, many more Indigenous people here in California that currently have no access to things to better their lives. And this is really wholly unacceptable. I think that, you know, until that issue is truthfully addressed within California, there's just going to be more of the same in terms of these disparities. And, you know, it's hurtful to come from the very same background as all other Indigenous people, to have had our relatives taken and placed in boarding schools, to have had our relatives murdered, taken as wives of colonizers, and suffered the same generational trauma. It is wholly unacceptable not to address those issues. So I'm here, you know, originally I felt like there should be a representative of the disenrolled on this Truth and Healing Council, but that was not entertained. But I'm here to say we are still here, and we deserve to have these things addressed. Thank you.
And next hand raised is Julie Holder.
Good morning, good afternoon. My name is Julie Holder. I am an urban Indian considered Kumeyaay, connected to San Isabel, California. I have been working for the state of California on a California Indian Heritage Center for years. The information that you are needing is already been done on several different realms. The heritage is here. The accountability has to start from the beginning, which is where you're working from. Accountability is how many opportunities and laws are in place for Indian people that don't get audited. The state of California is a good example. Audit who is working for the state to develop a $20 million project and find out that there's no Indians working for it. It's all being done in the state coffers. They're going to build on the confluence, which is in Sacramento. That's a big issue for us. Why are these issues being disregarded in this committee? You guys have the power to do it. We'll volunteer. We'll bring you people. We've been here. We've done it. We continue. We don't have a heritage center. We don't have a place for our information and an education center that we can go to prove who we are. We're unique in California. We could build a heritage genealogy center and help identify who we are. The money's there. The information's there. The accountability has to come from you. You have to help us figure out a way to make everybody accountable so we can go forward and solve these issues and not just keep hearing about them over and over again. We want things solved. It's all there. You have to use the people who can help you do it. And that's part of what I believe continues to happen within this system. There's no accountability, nobody to step up to the plate to say, hey, who's there? How do we get this done? Where's the money to do it? And let's get it done. Thank you.
All right, the next hand raised is Marisa Sullivan. Marisa, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Hello, everybody. My name is Marisa Sullivan. I'm the tribal chair for the Coastal Band of the Chumash Nation. Mostly our homelands are the Santa Barbara area and some other areas around there. I just want to bring up two things. First, I wanted to comment about the earlier discussion about seemingly the drop-off in participation by people in the listening sessions. And I was wondering if, is it possible that there's a video that as tribal chair, I certainly try to encourage my members to participate in these things, but I find that it's a little difficult to explain exactly what the commission is. It's kind of been evolving and you've certainly done a lot of work to be where you're at now. Beginning with when I first sat in, I think it was October, when it was first starting up a bit. But anyways, that's one suggestion, just possibly an update of some kind of video that we could provide a link to our members. I certainly do that with how I communicate with people. The next thing I want to also, I'd like to make a comment about giving support as well to Chairwoman Sis' comments. They did strike a chord with me, and I did find myself feeling like she was being, I don't want to say, well, I'm going to say it. It just seems like her comments weren't met with as much respect as they should have been. And so I do want to also say that, because I think it might've helped to actually acknowledge her comments rather than suggesting she not be divisive in her comments. So, and I know that Christina apologized for the perception of what she said, but you know, it is difficult as we are listening to things to kind of be a person listening. And it just did seem like she was not appreciated in what she said. And I certainly appreciate that she's constantly bringing up the voice of what are unrecognized, non-federally recognized people, which is who I represent. So, thank you for your time, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
And the next hand raised is Alice Sloan.
Yes, thank you very much. I was also very concerned about the disrespect that was shown, the wording that was, and I look at this and I don't think that that's an appropriate thing. And the words that keep a hearing is the disenrolled, the unrecognized, and then moving them down to a category or a subcommittee. And then the words really struck hard was perceived inequitables that weren't caused by Native people. And I'm thinking, but disenrollment has been caused by Native people. These are cousins and brothers, mothers and fathers that are doing this to their own people. It's not everybody's fault that we're rounded up and put on these reservations. It's not these people's fault of those ancestors being led to their places, some never making it back to their homelands, lands being grabbed up and given to others. I mean, there is a significant history, but I think what got me the most was people falling asleep or crossing their arms or making facial gestures when that chairwoman was speaking. And on behalf of this listening group, I really want to apologize to that chairwoman and say, I heard what you said, and I think that everything is validated. And when you're the lone voice up there, when everybody else is there and not speaking up because they belong to other tribes that are recognized, I know that it's a hard battle for you, that you're fighting with the state and for the people that are unrecognized. And I appreciate you standing up for everybody. Thank you.
And it looks like Julie Holder has her hand raised again. So Julie should be able to mute yourself.
I did not have my hand raised the second time. I didn't put it down. I apologize. Thank you.
Okay, that's, well, it looks like, I'll just assume you raised your hand in error again. That is the last hand raised. Oh, well, Ken Woodrow just raised their hand too, so. Ken, you should be able to unmute yourself.
I unmuted. Yes, when I'm speaking, I'm not speaking as an individual. I'm the tribal chair for my people. We did a constitution, bylaws, and membership requirements. We follow the 83 process. When I speak, I'm speaking for the hunters that I represent. We're from the San Joaquin Valley. Actually, we're from the Sequoia National Forest, Human Lake Ranger District. This is not the first time California came to the tribes and asked us what we need. How can we help? It turned on deaf ears. This is why I'm really into creating a commission for state recognition. Excuse me. That's a very good process. I mean, we could follow the criteria of the federal recognized criteria, the 83 process, but how much history do we have to give? I mean, you know who we are, 28 applications. Thank God, you know, they have my tribal name on there. We're supposed to go to a reservation, farms were built for us. We went there. It was not within our tribal area. We went back to our village in the 1870s. So there's a long history in the San Joaquin Valley of the unjustified acts done by the citizens to our people. So to me, this is a form that should for state recognition. I know everybody else, you know, some people emphasize their points. I am really emphasizing this. Some of my members say, don't do it, it's worth nothing. You know, the state's not gonna do anything. And I'm starting to realize that maybe it is, the state doesn't wanna hear us. You know, we have so much ethnographic studies done with our people. Books were written. We didn't go to the local res because there wasn't enough room. The land was lousy. The res was moved one time. My ancestors were there, but being that they, I wasn't born there, I cannot be a member. But I'm not going after that. I'm going after the people that are outside, my people, the Waxahachie Indian tribe, Indivich, Monos, you know, Monanches, We don't have nothing. And the state did this to us. Thank you.
That was the last hand raised.
Okie doke. Well, if that is it, then I will say that everyone can have a little bit of time back. So thank you all for joining. Again, please take a look at those documents and see if there's anything that feels like it needs to be changed drastically. If there's anything that you are not sure how to change, but you have thoughts on, let us know and we can try to figure out some options. And then if you have any other ideas about subcommittees that could help with the process of this council, we would love to hear those for the next council meeting as well. So if there's no further comments or if anybody, if everybody's good to go, then we will go ahead and call today's meeting.
Thank you, Christina.
I wanted to make one comment, Christina. This is Joe. I wanted to say, I can really only speak for myself as just one of the council persons for Truth and Healing Council. But I don't really think that, the interests, my personal interests are mutually exclusive from anything that, you know, that any of the unrecognized tribal members in the state live with or work towards or they're moving through. So I just wanted to emphasize that point that, maybe I'm representative, I'm an elder, I'm 71, but maybe I'm representative, maybe I'm not, but I have other Native people in the state, but I don't think that my being enrolled in a federally recognized tribe somehow makes my interest as I look across all the things that I work with as a council person for my tribe. My interests are not mutually exclusive than many of the struggles of non-recognized tribes. Thank you.
Thank you, council member. And we appreciate your words and we're looking forward to pulling all together to get some real work done here. So thank you all and have a good weekend.
Thank you.